Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I am Igrim. I'm from Brooklyn. I'm listening to Soundcheck from WNYC.
I'm going to let you in on a secret. I am a music nerd. Okay, so maybe not such a secret, but, you know, you got your run-of-the-mill music nerds, and then you've got the folks who just need to let their freak flag fly. You know, the ones who really need to crawl into every nook and cranny of their favorite Steely Dan album. Well, for the past 10 years, that kind of music fan has turned to a series of books called 33 and a Third. These pocket-sized volumes examine the albums of Rock and Roll 101, of course, but also explore some unexpected side alleys as well. And joining us to talk about the series, which hits volume number 100 this week, is Allie Jane Grossan, the series editor.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
And also joining us is the author and journalist Amanda Petrusic, who has written the series installment on the Nick Drake album, Pink Moon. Amanda, welcome back.
Thanks, John.
So, Allie Jane, what is 33 and a Third for listeners who haven't come across the series yet?
33 and a Third is a series of books, and each book explores one single album. So you've got 100 different people writing on 100 different albums. We'd like to say they're the best-loved albums of the past 50 years.
And is it 100 different? You have no, there are no return authors?
There are no return authors. There are a few duplicate artists. We've got 2 Rolling Stones books, 2 Beach Boys books.
Different albums,
different albums, yeah.
How did this come about? I mean, I know you weren't there at the birth, but you're running. You know the story. How did it come about? What was the idea?
So the creation myth is that in the early 2000s, David Barker was an editor at Continuum, mm-hmm. Which was an independent press doing a mix of academic and trade popular books. And there was a series called Continuum Contemporaries. And each of those books looked at a contemporary novel. So you've got, you know, Kotsuya's Disgrace, Murakami books, Harry Potter even. So David thought we could apply that same formula to albums. And so 33 and a Third was born. He started reaching out to writers he admired, asking them to write on certain albums. And it started with 3 or 4 volumes.
Well, volume one was Dusty in Memphis, Dusty Springfield, written by Warren Zanes,
yes.
Who for many years worked at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, brother of Dan Zanes. Eventually, Amanda, you came into the fold. But before that happened, Amanda, what was your first exposure to 33 and a Third?
The first installment in the series that I read was Douglas Woke's book about James Brown's Live at the Apollo, which is kind of a funny introduction now that I think about it because, you know, in some ways, reading a book about James Brown seems like a really counterintuitive thing to do, right? Like, that's a record that would not necessarily reward a literary retelling. But it's a beautiful book, and I learned so much about that record, and I thought Douglas contextualized it in some really strange and compelling ways, and I was immediately hooked. I also loved the books. It's such a nerdy thing to do, and again, it's a series that rewards a certain amount of nerdiness, but I kind of loved the way they looked all lined up on my shelf.
Yeah.
I remember being seduced by that.
Absolutely.
A certain ECM or Windham Hill kind of, you know, the artwork is very kind of consistent from volume to volume. All right, so for Amanda Petrusic, it was volume 13 of 33 and a Third that drew her in on this album, James Brown's 1963 Live at the Apollo. Classic record Live at the Apollo. That was Douglas Wolk's contribution to 33 and a Third, Volume 13, the 33 and a Third series, books about Classic Records, both the well-known and the lesser-known, is now up to 100 volumes. The 100th installment is on the Michael Jackson album Dangerous. And with me in the Soundcheck studio is Ali Jane Grossan, editor at Continuum Press, and the author Amanda Petrosich, who wrote the Nick Drake volume on the album Pink Moon. Now, here's the thing with 33 and a Third, though, is if you read enough of these books, you're going to come across books that are not just like, here's track one, and this is what happens, and then track two happened this way, and now it sounds like this. You've got, like, people doing memoirs and works of fiction, even. So how did all that happen?
I think all of those were sort of happy mistakes. I think when the series was originally conceived, it was meant to be track by track. This is how the album happened. These were the people involved. This is what was going on at the time. But, you know, as we got up to, you know, volume 20, we thought, well, actually, there are more interesting stories to be told about these albums than just, you know, what the recording process was like.
So you have people like John Darnielle of the Mountain Goats, who, I mean, still the most memorable part of the series for me is his record about the Black Sabbath album, Masters of Reality.
Absolutely. I mean, here you have nothing about the album itself, but instead just an obsessive, beautiful story of a person going through a mental crisis talking about Black Sabbath. Definitely one of the best in the series.
So some of the albums in the 33 and a Third series, Dusty in Memphis, Dusty Springfield was volume one. Then you'd have volumes on Let It Be by the Beatles, Let It Be by the Replacements, David Bowie's Low, Nirvana's In Utero, Joni Mitchell's Court and Spark, Nas, Illmatic, I mentioned the 100th installment, Michael Jackson's Dangerous. Amanda, volume 51 is yours. How did you come to choose Nick Drake's Pink Moon as your topic?
As I mentioned, I'd read a couple of books in the series, starting with the James Brown book, and I was really compelled by what they were doing. I thought it was really cool. And when I sat down to write my proposal, Pink Moon was the first record that came to mind. No one had written about it before. It was a really important record for me. And I also thought it had this really interesting posthumous history that hadn't necessarily been written yet. I was really intrigued by the ways in which that record had a whole second life following the Volkswagen commercial that was released in 2000 that featured Pink Moon as the sole auditory accompaniment. And I really wanted to talk about that. I mean, we were speaking just a few minutes ago about how that was such a strange time for music, the kind of dawn of the new millennium. And you know, record companies were scrambling. And it was also a watershed moment for advertising in which, you know, songs were suddenly appearing in commercials, and it was making bands' careers in a way that I think previously a lot of people had shunned or been sort of terrified by, the idea that, you know, music that we love could suddenly become an advertising jingle. So that story, I mean, obviously the story of Pink Moon itself, which is such a spare and beautiful record, but it's also a 28-minute record made by one guy. You know, there was an engineer in the room, long dead. There weren't a ton of people for me to talk to in terms of doing the more traditional treatment that we were speaking about earlier. So it seemed like an opportunity to talk about this other thing instead. I mean, certainly to talk about, to tell the story of the record, but to tell the whole story of the record from the moment in which it was made up through, you know, the way people listen to it now.
Right. An important point that this record has a much longer kind of posthumous history than it does a living history.
Yeah, and arguably I thought that those last few decades of interest in Nick Drake were almost more interesting than what happened in 1972.
I remember my wife had the TV on one night, and I heard Pink Moon while I was in the kitchen doing something. I came running in. It's like, what are you watching? And of course, it was that Volkswagen commercial, and this was the song.
I saw it written and I saw it say, Pink Moon is on its way. None of you stand so tall. Pink Moon, then I get you all on the Pink Moon. Yeah, Pink Moon. Pink, 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 pink.
Nick Drake's song, Pink Moon, from the album of the same name, and it is the subject of Amanda Petrusich and her book, On the Record, Volume 51. You really do kind of get confused, you know, with, yeah. I mean, it's so much a part of the act of being a music fan, both the writing and the reading of these books. And I guess, Allie Jane, that's...
And the editing also. Oh,
really? Yeah, for you too?
Yeah, you know, when I'm editing them, it's another chance to really get to know these records that I mostly love. And when I'm editing them, I do actually just listen to the record over and over and over again.
Okay.
I mean, we're also in a moment, too, where I feel like liner notes are becoming a sort of dead art in a way. And I think these books can be seen as a supplement to that. And, you know, I mean, it's something to read and sort of learn about while you listen to these records.
So, Allie Jane, are you kind of aware as you're making decisions on what, you know, proposals to take and what not to take, are you aware of, like, you know, wanting to both acknowledge a rock canon and also to move beyond it or expand it?
I think at this point in the series, I think we've pretty much, you know, we've done the rock canon. We've established that we're covering all of the greats. And I don't think I'm discounting the greats going forward, but I really am interested in expanding into other genres and highlighting, you know, more recent artists. You know, I think that decision was clear in the last round of proposals.
Yeah. So what are the big sellers in the series?
The two standout bestsellers are Kim Cooper's volume on Neutromilk Hotels and the Airplane Over the Sea and Carl Wilson's book on Celine Dion's Let's Talk About Love.
Okay, so let's talk about both of those. What do you think made Kim Cooper's book such a bestseller? Was it the right record? Was it the right audience that was just waiting for anything about this reclusive songwriter? Or was it just the right writer? I mean, what happened there?
It was, I think, just the perfect moment. And all of those things you just mentioned, I think, coming together. It was the right time. Jeff Mangum had been seen in many years. It was the right moment for people to rediscover that album. At that time, you had college radio, the great last days mm-hmm. of college radio. And not only that, but that book is sort of, it does go track by track. It tells mm-hmm. you know, who was involved, what instruments were playing. It goes into the lyrics. And I think, you know, in that ways, it's sort of the perfect 33 and a third in that she talked to everyone. She told the history and wrote it brilliantly also.
Yeah. And it really does. I mean, I found that a very useful volume just because the lyrics on that record are so dense, and to be able to parse them, you know, was really very helpful.
Yep.
You know, so that was the kind of thing where you actually would put the CD on mm-hmm. and listen as you read. The album is Neutromilk Hotels, In the Aeroplane Over the Sea. Is Neutromilk Hotel, led by, for many years, the very reclusive Jeff Mangum, but now the band is out and touring again. And the song Holland 1945 from the great record called In the Aeroplane Over the Sea. That was the subject of Volume 29 in the series 33 and a Third, written by Kim Cooper. Once again with me on Soundcheck today, Allie Jane Grossan, the editor of the series at Continuum Press, called 33 and a Third, and the author Amanda Petrusich, who wrote one of the volumes, the one on Nick Drake's album Pink Moon. Allie Jane, you can't, as much as you might like to at 33 and a Third, you can't say, you know, we sparked the renaissance, the revival of interest in LPs, but you can certainly lay claim to having boosted the sales of this record consistently over the years with this book.
we can't take responsibility for the resurgence of vinyl, but I think it's just, it's in the air. And as you said, you know, everything's digital, and listening to a playlist on Spotify is not the same as putting a record on. And I think, you know, you put the record on and then you want to revisit it and you want to read 100 pages about that record.
And Amanda, I mean, your recent, the last time you were on the show was talking about real obsessives.
Yeah.
And the real, you know, the people who collect the old 78 RPM, the really rare discs and stuff. The idea of the object, you know, it refuses to go away.
Yeah, I mean, I think as long as people have hands, you know, they want something in those hands. I don't know, it's satisfying. It feels good, I think, for people.
I think it's also amazing to go into an Urban Outfitters now and see an entire floor display of suitcase record players. And you haven't seen that in 30 years.
Yeah, really. Mm-hmm. All right, you mentioned that there are two standout bestsellers in the series. One is the Neutral Milk Hotel book. The other is a very, very peculiar volume in the series devoted to Celine Dion. Carl Wilson,
yes.
From Toronto, if
yep.
I'm remembering correctly,
has
been on the show a couple of times, including to talk about this volume. And I'm still not sure I get it.
It's one of those books that you just have to read. The reactions are a laugh, an eye roll, it's Celine Dion, why would I want to spend time reading a book about Celine Dion, an artist I so obviously despise for whatever reason? And that's what the book is about. It's about being a music lover and being angry that Celine Dion is one of the most successful acts of all time. And Carl is just so brilliant at dissecting that feeling and thinking about why he might feel that way. And in the end, it kind of comes around.
Yeah, maybe coming through that feeling
exactly.
somewhat. Now, Amanda, you teach writing about pop music at NYU. You use this book in your class?
I do. I assign this book to my students every semester, and they have a very similar reaction to the one you guys are talking about. I mean, they'll read Lester Bangs and Rob Sheffield and Chuck Klosterman, and then they see this little book with a picture of, you know, Celine Dion on the cover, and they sort of regard me with a certain amount of horror, I think, and fear when they realize that this is what we're going to spend some time talking about. But it is, I mean, as you guys were saying, it's a really great and complicated book. And one of the arguments I think Wilson makes is that, you know, Celine Dion, the kind of cultural currency that she affords people is maybe not worth a whole lot. And he really looks into it. It's a good thing, I think, for students who are training to become critics, to sort of become aware of that, of the, you know, the certain cultural capital that artists can carry or not carry. And so for me, it's a really interesting way to start to talk about taste and to kind of talk about all of the extra musical and sort of sociocultural things that go along with liking a record, what it means to like Celine Dion in 2014.
Mm-hmm. And you know, if you're teaching potential music critics, they have to know about critical thinking. And
yeah.
this, you're watching a guy engaging in critical thinking right there in front of you in this volume, devoted to this record by Celine Dion.
Love was when I loved you. One true time I'd hold you. In my life will always near, far, wherever you are, I believe that the heart does go on.
Go on. Celine Dion. Read all about it in Carl Wilson's book about Celine Dion. That is part of the 33 and a third series, volumes devoted to specific records. The series now celebrating its 10th anniversary with an event at Powerhouse Books in Dumbo, Brooklyn on Thursday, October 2nd. The 100th installment of the series is on Michael Jackson's record Dangerous. And my guests here in the Soundcheck studio, Allie Jane Grossan, editor of 33 and a Third, which you mentioned Continuum was the original publisher, but now they've been bought by Bloomsbury.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And Amanda Petrosich, also with us, author of Do Not Sell at Any Price, her fabulous book about obsessive collectors of rare 78 RPMs, and also the 33 and a third volume on Nick Drake's Pink Moon. Amanda, there's 100 volumes. You've been a fan of the series for a long time. What's a record that you think still is out there that deserves the 33 and a third treatment?
Ooh, that's a great question. There's so many. Well, I've recently become sort of obsessed with this record by a guy named Bobby Charles, who maybe you're familiar with, John. He played with a lot of the guys from the band.
Yeah.
He made a self-titled record in the late 70s that was just recently reissued by Light in the Attic. Before that was previously very unavailable. And it's he was a songwriter for Chess Records. He wrote that track See You Later, Alligator, that a lot of people may know. Mm-hmm. I would love to read a book about Bobby Charles. That's sort of an obscure choice. I'm excited that the series is doing, and certainly starting with the Celine Dion book, is doing more pop records. And I would like to see some critical dissections of maybe a few contemporary pop records. Would be fun.
Little Adele or something like
right.
that.
Selena Gomez.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Now, Allie Jane, when we asked you of all the books in the series that you have an attachment to, you picked J. Dilla's Donuts. It was such a weird record when it came out that this really needed a 33 and a third.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was a record that I had listened to, you know, maybe once or twice and didn't I knew the story, you know. Briefly, that
Detroit beat producer, you know, fabulous, gifted guy who was diagnosed with lupus at age 31.
Yes.
And you know, died shortly after the release of this record.
Right, and I think the story of this record is that, you know, he was at the height of his career. He was producing, you know, everyone on the radio and just finding these incredible samples, and he was really a pioneer in that way. And then was diagnosed with this fatal illness and tried to hide it from all his friends. You know, he kept producing. And the story of this record is literally him sitting on his deathbed at Cedars-Sinai Hospital in Los Angeles, with his laptop and his stack of records and his friends coming to visit and them having conversations about music. And then he produces this work, mm-hmm. you know, and then sadly he passes away. And then that's it. And that's all we get from him.
It's a really nice volume and a really nice addition to the 33 and a third series. And that's what we'll conclude with. A little bit of J. Dilla's Donuts. Allie Jane, Amanda, to the two of you, thanks so much for being with us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
Play me. Play me. Buy me. Working on it. Working on it. Working on it.
Work it out. Work it out. Work it out.
Soundcheck is a production of WNYC in New York. Find out more about our show at soundcheck.org or just download the new WNYC mobile app. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.
Play me. Buy me.